Let the record show that we have a quorum. Mr. Carmel, any report from closed session?
Nothing to... Am I on? Am I on?
There you go.
Nothing...
Am I on? Nothing.
Nothing to report, Mr. Okay. President. We discussed the general manager's performance and contract negotiations. That's on your open session agenda.
Thank you, sir. I think your mic still is not... Your microphone still is not...
Try again.
Me. No?
You got it?
Oh, should I do it again? There's nothing to report.
Okay. Thank you. Special report, Sheriff's Department.
Thank you, Mr.
Is this on?
There you go.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, member of the public. I am Stuart MacDonald, Patrol Sergeant at the Sheriff's Coast Station, giving a report for the month of September for service in the Cambria community. From September 1 to September 30 this year, we handled a total of 387 calls for service. 66 of those were emergency medical services calls that are dispatched through our agency. There were 54 assist other agency services. There were 3 crimes against persons. One was an assault with a deadly weapon, which is a felonious crime. It's an assistance calls, which is somewhat higher than normal. We had 13 suspicious circumstances or suspicious subject calls, 32 incomplete 911 calls, 9 alarm calls, and a total of 79 self-initiated type activities. Of that, there were 24 traffic or pedestrian stops during the month, and 35 other on-site or flag-down type circumstances where deputies initiated contact and initiated activity. And during the month, there was 1 arrest for drunk in public in the Cambria community. Of most recent interest, I'd like to mention our successful introduction of a Ponga last week. That was a successful interdiction, which led to the arrest of 22 people and seizure of just under 3,500 pounds of marijuana that came on shore last week. The load vehicles were identified and tailed where they were. Attempts to stop those vehicles were made. 2 of the 3 main vehicles were stopped and successfully. The third one went on a very short pursuit, failing to yield to the signal of the patrol vehicle. It was trying to stop it. It ended up driving down through a gate, which the driver presumably assumed led to a dirt road. However, it did not. It was an access gate that Caltrans uses at the edge of a very steep embankment. So the van carrying passengers and marijuana ended up taking a very bumpy road, very bumpy ride down a very steep, long embankment and overturning at the bottom. I want to say we took about 19 people, no, I'm sorry, we took about 15 people into custody at the time of the stops, and then over the next couple of days, we ended up making contact and arrests of people, many of them came up a couple days later onto Highway 46 where he was contacted, tied to the crime and arrested.
Okay. Thank you, Sergeant. Any questions for... Thank you for your report, Sergeant MacDonald.
All right, appreciate thank it. You very much.
Next, we have a fire department report. Chief Miller.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, members of the board, and the community. I'm Mark Miller with Cambria CSD Fire Department. As everybody knows, it is October, and it is one of our busy months for the fire services. Fire Prevention Week was recognized the 7th through the 13th this year. Our crews contacted roughly 500 students in the community and two schools and did presentations and fire safety demos and station tours throughout throughout the week period, and we were very active with that. Also tied to that, I don't know if anybody noticed, on the 10th, it was the burn relay came to town, the San Luis Obispo County Fire Service burn relay for the Alyssa Ann Roosh Burn Foundation. This is an annual event where all the fire departments throughout the county team together and do a procession through all of the communities. Our procession on the north end starts at San Miguel, goes to Paso, Atascadero, down through Morro Bay, and then back up to Cambria. There's probably 7 or 8 different fire companies that are present for that, and they are transporting around the TV KSBY's news personality. This year it was Matt Santa Maria was with it, and they stop at all of the schools and do fire prevention demos. And the purpose of the burn relay is to raise money for the Alyssa Ann Roosh Burn Foundation, which supports victims of child burn victims and sends them to camp. This year, the burn relay in San Luis Obispo County collected roughly $2,000, and $800 of that was collected here by a donation from the Cambria Firefighters Association. So we were proud of that. I think we got the large batteries and get that done. We want to make sure that the community has functional working smoke detectors. They're one of the most important life safety pieces of equipment that you can have. The fire department and the community health care district in town continue to work together for the shared services and the co-location. We had a very productive meeting at LAFCO to discuss some of the hurdles of trying to make that come together. And the legal team for the health care district and CCSD are working together to try to draft an agreement up to try to make that happen. And that's about all I have. If you have any, if there are any questions about anything.
Director Clift, any?
Just to make sure it's a clarification of not combining the two agencies, just an agreement to work out the personnel.
To work together in a shared services.
Yeah. Maybe I just wasn't close enough to. Is it on?
The point that Director Clift is making is that it's not a takeover or a elimination of one of the two agencies or districts. It is a cooperative agreement for the two to work together to provide services in a more expeditious and efficient manner, and possibly co-locating the two agencies. But it's not a dissolving of one district or the other. It's an agreement to work together better.
Okay, with that, thank you, Chief Miller. We have no presentations today. Moving on to agenda review, additions, deletions, and poll consent items. I'd like to say, first of all, that I have moved the agenda item for public comment on items not on the agenda back behind the regular business. And the reason for this being that people that are here on specific agenda items will have the opportunity to hear that before we get into the miscellaneous comments that that are pertinent to.
Thank you, President. Can you hear me? Can everybody hear me on this one? Yes? Okay, good, good. I want to make sure that before I... Yeah, maybe the volume needs to be adjusted a little bit, but it doesn't sound like I'm hearing myself, but as long as everybody else can hear me, that's fine. Let me just go over a couple things briefly in my general manager's report, starting on page 5. Staff, we continue to closely monitor the production records, production well levels, and monitoring wells within the within of our wells and the WBE well. I just really want to thank the water department and the wastewater department for keeping a really close eye on the system. I looked at the production figures from September 19th to October 7th from 2007 to 2013 to see if the recent watering outdoor restrictions imposed by the board resulted in less water being produced. In 2007, from September 19th to October 7th, the district pumped approximately 37.5 acre-feet of water. In 2008, during that same time frame, the district pumped about 40 acre-feet. In 2009, the district pumped right around 40 acre-feet again. In 2010, from the same time period, we pumped about 42.5 acre-feet. 2011, we ran about almost 40 acre-feet. And in 2012, we ran about 41 acre-feet. This year, from the time the restrictions were put on from September 20th to October 7th, we pumped 36.25 acre-feet, which was the lowest amount that we pumped in 7 years by about 2 acre-feet. And then I forwarded the board some more information I thought would be helpful. From October 7th to today, or till the 21st of October, for the same time period starting in 2007. So I brought it forward, if you will, and just to provide the board some more information. From October 7th to October 21st, starting in 2007, it was 27 acre-feet, 2008, 31 acre-feet, 2009, 27 acre-feet, 2010, 29, 2011, 28, 2012, 31, and then again, 2013 was 25 acre-feet. So from the 19th of September to the 7th of October, it was the lowest in 7 years. And then from the 7th of October to the 21st of October, it was the lowest in that 7-year period. So I don't necessarily want to draw a hypothesis from that or say that it's directly proportioned to the outdoor irrigation. I just containers to trash cans to a couple hundred gallon containers, so I appreciate everybody working on that. I've been in contact directly with Colonel Colton. She's the new colonel down at Army Corps of Engineers, and myself and the district engineer and one board member will plan on going down there and having a face-to-face meeting with them in December. We're moving forward with, again, several infrastructure repairs. As you know, that's kind of my mantra. That's one of the things that I really enjoy making sure that we're continuing to do. So I just listed a couple of them here that we're working on right now, and that's the SR4 connection to the sewer system, repairs to the Orlando sewer lateral. When we did our CCTV cleaning, we found 4 laterals that were literally disconnected from the main line. And so we're going to go in there and dig it up and repair those. The reason that's important is when the rains come, those systems that aren't really tight will be inundated with rain and will could cause sanitary sewer overflows like we've had in the past. We're in the process right now of raising and repairing about 25 manholes. Some of those manholes were in Fern Canyon and some of those manholes were in Strawberry Canyon. They've kind of got covered up by Mother Nature over the years, so we've cleared those away, and we're repairing those. If you walk down Moonstone Beach, like I do almost every day, you'll see a couple of them, 3 or 4 of them that were repaired in the last week. Repairs to the sewer line on Dovert Court. There's only 2 houses on Dovert Court up there, but when we did the CCDV cleaning, we found out that the line was crushed, or at least in really bad shape, so we need to do an immediate repair on that. We're also going to be improving the mechanical joints, the emergency bypass, and repositioning and replacing and installing check valves at Lift Station B. Lift Station B is the town's main lift station. It's behind Huntington, and there's 2 or 3 phases that we want to do. So we're going to have DeChance come in there and do some immediate repairs on that, replacing some of the valves. Luckily, the valves were purchased last fiscal year. We continue to work with the county collaboratively on some erosion-related issues. You know, we don't have land use authority. That's the county's responsibility, and there has been some instances where runoff has affected our infrastructure, specifically on Piney Way. And Piney Way is our main distribution line that runs from the is down to once a week, and Coast Union School has also reduced their irrigation at their at their facility at the high school. I distributed a phase one wastewater audit to the board done by Phoenix Engineering, John Turner. And what it did is it looked at all of our lift stations and it evaluated what needs to be done. And so I've provided that to the board. It is a public document. If anybody would like a copy of that, just let me know, and I'll be more than happy to get that to the to anybody who wants it.
Mr. Gruber, maybe you could put that on the website.
Yeah, we'll put that on the website. I'll have Monique make a copy of that. We've taken all of our maps. I'm sorry I'm rambling on, but I want to make sure that we understand, you know, all the good things that we're doing. We've taken all of our district maps and we scan them, and we turn them into map books. And one of the concerns that I've heard from the residents and from the board is that in certain instances we haven't responded quick enough to shutting valves off and saving water, and why did it take so long? Well, now we have map books in the cars or the vehicles that will enable our operators, water and wastewater, when they get on scene, instead of having to go through a bunch of maps and run back to the wastewater plant or the water plant, they'll be able to just to look at the map books right there and identify where the valves are and identify where our underground assets are and shut the system down a little bit quicker than we have before. Let me go on to the finance manager's report on page 9. One thing I want to point out is LAIF and reserves. The way our reserves work is if we don't spend money out of our water and wastewater budget on projects that were identified within a budget year, then that money rolls over into our wastewater and water reserves. It doesn't go into our general fund reserves. It goes back into our water and wastewater reserves. And those are enterprise funds, and those funds can't be used for anything else. So as you can see, we've our LAIF balance, our general net worth, if you will, on page 12, has gone down from $4.1 million to about $3.88 million. But if you look at September 30th of 2012 on page 12, that's kind of an anomaly. We were at a high, and we met with the Budget Committee this last week, and it was pointed out by them that if you really look at starting in 2010 and 2011 and 2013, we kind of hover around the $3.9, $3.8 million, and that 4.1 was kind of an anomaly. It was nice to have reserves up at that point. We have a full-time conservation person, or the board budgeted for a full-time conservation. Attachment 1 and Attachment 2 indicate the increase is mainly due in wastewater, water, and resource conservation departments. For the wastewater, the largest single factor by far was a total of $115,659 being paid to clean, videotape, and manage 20% of the CCSD sewer pipes. There were also two unbudgeted wastewater projects totaling almost $18,000 for repair of the Fern Canyon sewer line and for manhole easements projects in Strawberry Canyon. And so those were projects that we identified when we did the first 20% of our CCTV cleaning. I'm really pleased that that's all we discovered. I think prior to them doing the CCTV testing, I was concerned that we were going to find significant infrastructure damage above and beyond these two repairs. And so once we got the first 20% done, we did find some things that needed to be addressed, but they didn't require digging up the streets and replacing a large amount of infrastructure that we just can't afford to do. For water, the largest single item was improvement to the SR4 well. The cost was $92,000. Other significant projects paid for during the time frame include approximately $17,000 for valve replacement at Brighton and Chelsea, and $12,000 to replace the Stewart Street motor starter and controller, and to repair fire hydrants on Main Street at a cost of $10,964. The fire hydrant on Main Street, we've filed a claim with the person's insurance company, so we anticipate getting paid back for that in full. Let me continue on here. Page 12, we talked a little bit about reserves. Page 13 again is our debts and when those will be paid off. Let me just go over a few things really quick. Mark talked about his fire chief's report on page 16. The utility manager's reports on page 19, that's Mike. Mike's over our water department and our wastewater department. And it's really encouraging to see that the board supports and continues to support staff on repairing our infrastructure. We've done a lot in the last couple of years, and we still have a long way to go. But every month you'll see that we're replacing things that need to be replaced. It's just like your home. So continue on. On page 21 is the Facilities and Resources Department. That's Carlos. Carlos is responsible for this facility, the bathrooms, the skate park, our administrative building, and the entire Fiscalini Ranch. And he has just under three people that takes care of all that. So they do a really good job. In this facility right here, we had 39 events that were held in this building since our last board meeting, and you couldn't tell just by looking around that the board's put a lot of money into conservation, and we want to make sure that we continue to show the things that the conservation department is doing. The conservation department, Courtney, and Courtney's here because I thought maybe if one of the directors or all the directors had some questions about conservation and some of the things that she's doing on page 36, that she could answer those questions. So we have her here also. With that, I can answer any questions. But we also have starting on page 23 is Bob's report, the district engineer's report, and he's, as you can see, quite busy. And I wanted to allow him the opportunity to talk a little bit about some of the things that he's doing, and then maybe him and I could dovetail and answer any questions that the board may have on my staff report or any of the other staff reports that have been submitted to you this month.
Okay. Mr. Gushens. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I'll go briefly, and please feel free to stop me or, you know, ask questions as I go here. The first item on my report is assistance to water and wastewater operations coordinated with Rain for Rent for delivery of a rental tank over to the SR4 treatment facility to help its operation and to allow them to run it at times when it's short cycling during periods when it can't take all the reclaimed water and run it back through the filter. So there's an additional tank out at that site right now. Operations worked very hard in hooking that up, so it's connected. That's also related to item number two, which is this drain line for the SR4 treatment facility. And we have been working quite a bit on that project, readying it for going out to bid, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, and then have something in front of you to award a contract on your November 21st board meeting. So that will help operations further once we get that drain line installed. And that would, again, that would be from the SR4 treatment facility, cutting through some of the property at the high school and then connecting into Santa Rosa Creek Road where there's an existing sewer line. We did also on item three, we filed the land use permit applications with the county for both the Stewart Street Tank 3 project as well as the Rodeo Grounds Pump Station replacement project. So we're starting that process with the county. The long-term water supply project, we met with the Water Alternatives Ad Hoc Committee on October 9th. I have attached the project schedule for the EIS, EIR. It hasn't changed. This is an old schedule. It really hasn't been updated since June. But it is attached as one of the attachment one to the report. That shows the 45-day public review starting around the 10th. Of January. We believe that's going to be delayed further, probably by at least 3 months, most likely. That ties into the need to do additional hydrogeological modeling for the brackish water alternative. So we have to resolve that. And we're hopeful we'll talk about that when we meet with the colonel. As Jerry mentioned, early December, we're going to go down to L.A. The Task 57 on that schedule shows a signed record of decision occurring around September 24th of 2014. That's kind of the final action that the Army Corps takes in certifying an EIS. So that's kind of a key end date to keep in mind as we get further updates on the schedule. Jerry already spoke about meeting with the colonel, so we're not going to. I'm not going to repeat that. I just reiterated some of the project costs on the different alternatives that were presented back on a September 18, 2012 workshop. Just to see, refresh everyone's memory, we had the brackish water at about $12.9 million. The local seawater desalination was around $14.5 million. The whale rock storage was $21.7 million. The shared Morro Bay desalination was $26.6 million, and then the surface storage was $65.3 million. Just to summarize the key projects that they're evaluating in the EIS. I did attach a September 24th letter that was received from them showing their financial summary as of August 31st, 2013. That showed that the federal funding left for the Corps to oversee the contracts with the prime contracts, and that's the Chambers Group doing the EIS and the CDM Smith that's doing the technical part of the project. That's $7,800 remaining, and they had $32,800 remaining from what the CCSD had provided them some time ago, and that was, I think, $166,000. The most recent reports I've received from operations as of this last Monday was close to 5 feet. So we've had almost a half a foot increase since this report was produced, which is definitely a good trend. It shows the benefit of running well SR4, which operations is doing. Based on the October 15th well levels and then using an assumed demand based on 2007, which might be a little conservatively high, we had about 135 acre feet of supply in the San Simeon Aquifer, and that doesn't include anything from the Santa Rosa Aquifer, and about 119 acre feet of demand was estimated to get to the end of the dry season, which was a theoretical date that came out of the model, which was predicted to be December 22nd of this year. So whether you believe that or not, I mean, that's what the model was telling us. Now, I went through the October 21 levels, which was just below 5 feet. It was 4.96 feet. And the estimated supply was 145 acre feet. So it's improved from by about 10 acre feet since a week ago or a week earlier, which is definitely a good trend. The demand for that October 21st to the December 22nd is down to 108 acre feet. So now you got kind of differential between 145 of supply and roughly 108 of estimated demand for that period. So it's a good trend that we're on. The rest of that I won't get into much detail. I did a little comparison and contrast with the 2005 and 2007 production years, which seemed to be close to where we were at the time. The 2005 production was 741 acre feet in comparison for the whole year, and 748 in 2007. In 2012, we did about 725 in production. So it kind of gives you a rough gauge of where we might be at the end of the year. And that pretty much concludes my report, unless you have a specific question, maybe on a particular graph or anything. I won't get into it this time.
Thank you, Mr. Greshens. Members, any questions for Mr. Gruber or Mr. Greshens, Director Berenger?
Mr. Greshens, I was at a ad hoc committee meeting and you were there too, and I forgot to
CAP's office. So he's on top of that, but I will double-check.
I remember the conversation, and he was talking about the 5-year, but I don't think we emphasized to him that we have been spending money during the past 5 years. According to this letter, it's clear that we've been spending government money.
Yes. And,
okay.
Okay. Thank you. All right, moving to member and committee reports.
I have a couple questions. Question on page 11, which is the internal loan we were just talking. We were just talking about with the Army Corps. Is there a reason why we haven't paid that back? I vaguely remember a discussion of the boards a couple of years back about whether or not to leave that unpaid. I mean, we owe it to ourselves, right? And we're not. It's kind of essentially an interest-free loan. Is there a reason why we haven't paid that off and kind of cleared it off of the?
Was before my time, but I think I would have to go back and look at the staff report and the resolution. I don't
11.
Think there was specifically a plan implemented to say that we would pay it back over a certain period of time. I think that there was always the assumption, and I support that assumption, that it should be paid back to the water fund, that's why it continues to show there.
If I was
to bring any kind of loan, I guess, to the board, I would always have the caveat in there through resolution that a payment plan back for it. So at some point in time, I would support looking at paying that amount back.
Seems to me with all the infrastructure modifications, maintenance, and improvement that we could use that money in the water fund pretty much right now, especially because we're going to be getting underway with a rate study, but that's going to be a little while before that'll be able to be implemented and have that money available for that. Page 13, this looks like a new report. Is this going to be an ongoing report? It's the analysis of revenue and expenditures, July to September.
I had Alan put this in only because of the amount of expenditures relating to what we've been doing for infrastructure, and I thought it would be helpful to the board. Yes, it's something that I'd like
to. I'm glad to see it. I just wanted to know if it was ongoing, because it would be helpful to have more than just the single report. Be able to track it over time, I think, is all I'm saying. And I appreciate having the additional information available.
And it's just at his fingertips, so I'll make a note, but it was our plans to have this.
It would be good to know when we have money coming in that's not just from taxes or rates.
At this time, we don't have any revenue coming in from grants, and I think that's unfortunate. I think there's some, I think there's some real opportunities for us as we look at this year's budget and look at next year's budget, especially relating to some of our larger projects. Mm-hmm. There's money through the United States Department of Agriculture. There's funds available through Department of Reclamation and things like that. So I would also support having someone on staff, or at least hiring somebody to maybe go after those funds and identifying them, because there's so many out there, and it takes somebody that's really be able to be focused on them and to spend just their time on that. But I think it would really pay for itself.
And then the conservation report. One of the things that I was hoping to have happen between the last the meeting when we enacted the resolution or the new ordinance about banning landscaping irrigation was that we were going to address the top 25 users, and I didn't hear anything in the report about whether we've started on that process. And I know that the commercial accounts are accounting for more of a higher percentage than they used to of the amount of water total that gets used. So I would like to make sure that, in addition, since we're causing the community to some inconvenience with their landscape irrigation, it would be nice to know that the people who are maybe not necessarily wasting but could be wasting are being addressed.
President Thompson, would it be okay to have Courtney, our conservation specialist, specifically address Director Rice's question?
Absolutely.
Because I think we're heading in that direction, and it's a very good question, and I think it's very important.
Can you hear me? Okay. I between the time that I wrote the staff report and last week, I scheduled an appointment with 4 hotels. So I'm hoping to try to do one audit a month and then get the, I'm sorry, one audit a week. So I'm going to do the 4 hotels happen to all be owned by the same entity. So I'm just going to go on Tuesday. And so I should, I'm moving forward per the conversation that we had. Do you have any other questions for me?
Make an explanation on your question on page 11 on that $166,000 loan. At that time, I think that was in 2008 that occurred. The Army Corps, on very quick notice, requested $166,000 to be paid. I think it was on 2 weeks' notice. Also, at that particular time, it was in the midst of some budget things, and water was in they didn't have any excess money. And so it was the, in order to meet that commitment, it was necessary to take it from the general fund, and it was categorized as a loan rather than just a grant type thing in case later on it would could be repaid. But it was a matter of meeting a very quick response time situation where that became a loan on that.
Okay, thank you. No other questions. We'll turn to members and committee reports. Anyone have a report to offer? Director Rice?
I attended the NCAC meeting this month, and a couple of things. People's self-help housing, the affordable housing project over by the middle school, came back with a new design, completely different architect. It's been reduced to 33 units, plus a manager's unit and a community room that has, in the women's room, 3 toilets, 2 bathrooms, 4 washing machines. In the men's room, it's got a toilet, a urinal, and a sink. And I like to, and it has an irrigation plan. They have an irrigation plan. Why do they have an? Can we prevent them from irrigating outside? There's no cistern included in the project, and these are the things that concern me. I realize that they have a certain number of EDUs that have been assigned to the project, and I know, Bob, that you had gone over those plans. But can we make sure that we are appropriating the right amount? And I don't know what I know. We have no land use authority, but we do have a little bit of control in terms of the water and things. So maybe we can address some of those specific issues, because they really have been responsive to the concerns the NCAC had raised about the prior project in terms of size and location on the property and all of that stuff. And now I was shocked when it said that there's going to be
put conditions specifically relating to the size of that project, and now it's something different. I would have more of a comfort level if we had the chance to review those revised plans, making sure that they still fall within the allocated water that they have in the EDUs, and then the board could specifically spell out the conditions in which they want to see relating to water efficiency and conservation. That would be my suggestion.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Also, there was a big presentation by Caltrans regarding the Highway 1 realignment project, which they're realigning Highway 1 up by the hotel that used to be there that they tore down, where Highway 1 goes up by Piedras Blancas, where Highway 1 gets essentially inundated with waves at high tide. They're realigning it inland a certain amount. They have done an amazing amount of trying to incorporate the minimal amount of disturbance of native habitats and doing restorations where the road currently is. And they think it's going to solve a lot of issues that have been going on up there besides just the fact that the road is about to fall into the ocean. So that'll be starting up probably sometime in They're hoping to get started, I think, sometime before next summer. But that was kind of an interesting presentation. I'm sure that if you're interested, you can contact Caltrans and be happy to give you more information on that. The last thing was that the Christmas market that the lodge had planned to put on, I think, has been put on hold, and the Coastal Commission has taken over the project of their own volition, so I'm not sure that that market is going to happen this year. That permitting was... So they've been stalled out, essentially. The Coastal Commission is going to be looking at it. And I think that's it that I have for the NCAC.
Okay, thank you, Director Rice. The Ad Hoc Shared Services Committee with the Health District met, but Chief Miller reported on that, so we won't belabor that. Director Robinette?
Thank you. I just wanted... Can you hear me? This has been seeming light to me today. Just to kind of call, I think, to everyone's attention, it did remind me, Director Rice, when you had talked about plans being changed at the county. And I served on the Land Use Committee for some time with NCAC. And one of our frustrations slash hopes that whatever happened would be with people that worked on the Land Use, and I'm sure this is still the practice, and that is that they work hard, they go on site, they make recommendations, they know the design standard for Cambria, and yet then again it seems that projects are allowed to change with the county and we kind of are out of the loop by then. So it's just something again to I would say work with county planning and say, you know, there has to be something where people submit for a planned unit development permit or a building permit, that we see the same plans that they actually expect to build. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Robinette. Director Berger?
I attended a short infrastructure ad hoc committee meeting. I think Mr. Gruber talked a bit about that. We got to look at some of the SCADA issues, the automation that's going on in SR4, and the continuous measurement of the well, the monitoring well. And we discussed a group of projects that are going to be put up on the list of infrastructure projects that need to be attended to. They're going to be looked at as far as the rate study. And probably the most significant thing was that there's a suggestion that the ad hoc committee become a standing committee. So those issues will be... all of us can discuss that, which will be very good, and it's very important. And so it'll be an additional meeting for us, an additional public meeting, but that's fine. I think that's the most outstanding recommendation there. So we'll be seeing those particular Stewart Street tank project, the rodeo grounds project, and additions to SCADA, et cetera. So that's in the future. I also attended a water resources committee meeting along with Director Cliff, and that's where it was decided where we go down to actually physically talk to the new colonel of Army Corps of Engineers, and we also talked about securing the funds that are going to be available to us, regardless of whether we have a $20 million project or a $2 million project. Those federal funds will be very valuable in that project. So, and if either Director Rice or Director Cliff would like to expand on those meetings, I'd feel free.
Okay, thank you.
I just one other thing. I want to remind folks that the desalination project and all those things are everything is, you know, so busy. So many things going on. But if you would like to be a part of the Forest Committee, if you want to help find ways to protect our forest to make sure that it stays healthy, please come to one of our meetings, because the public is more than welcome at any time. Wednesdays, second Wednesday every month at Rabobank, 6 p.m.
Okay, thank you, Director Rice. Moving to item 5C, the water status update. Mr. Gruber? Unless you want to tie that in with 7A as a little prelim to that.
That'd be great.
Okay. All right, so then we'll hold over 5C and discuss it with item 7A. We have before us then the consent agenda.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Moved by Director Berenger.
Second.
Second by Director Clift. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Consent agenda is approved. That brings us now to item 7A, hearings and appeals. And Mr. Gruber, if you just want to tie in the your comments, discussion on water status update with that, that would be appreciated.
Thank you. I was looking for it, and I forgot that it was verbal, and that's why I asked to put it in little parentheses, put verbal around it so I don't forget that it's verbal. But so that was the item 5C, the water status update was verbal. So let me just touch a little bit on that. As District Engineer Robert Greshens indicated that the San Simeon well field has come up since our time where it was down to right around 2 feet. We've been able to do that by running the SR4 well. The SR4 well is located right behind the high school on the Santa Rosa Creek over there. And Director Berenger talked a little bit about our SCADA system and how we interfaced everything, and it allowed us to be able to run that Santa Rosa Creek well. And we did that by putting a analog recorder down in the WBE well, which stands for Windsor Bridge East, and it's right there by the wastewater plant. You'll see two well casings right there, and that well, that's a monitoring well, and that to the SR4 well, and the SR4 well kicks on and kicks off. What we've seen over a period of time is that the San Simeon wells continue to rise. They're right now at about 4.96. San Simeon well number one, as of the 21st of this month, was at 5.48 feet. San Simeon number two, 5.19, and San Simeon number three is at 4.20. And those are, we have three wells. Those are up the San Simeon Creek Road up there behind the state campground. And so the well levels at the Santa Rosa Creek SR4 well are holding pretty good. They're in the 40s. I don't have that exact number. Hopefully Bob can give me the exact number. But we still have a lot of water in that aquifer. The WBE well, that monitoring well, is, as you can see, is at 3.03, so there's not a lot of freeboard there. But as District Engineer Greshens indicated before, that if we weren't able to run that, SR4 well, we still have revised calculations of 145 acre feet in the San Simeon, with demand being projected from 119 down to 108 feet. So we picked up 21 acre feet in the San Simeon well field based on Bob's calculations and the rise of the well levels in the San Simeon wells. So that's kind of the update, and now we could go into item 7A, and this one is a public hearing to consider resolution 42-2013 relating to adoption of revised enhanced water conservation measures and restricted use of potable water. When staff wrote this, we wanted to give the board enough flexibility to, even though in the staff report we make a recommendation that we would like to keep things in place, I think there's a willingness on staff's part to be a little more flexible than we originally indicated, and I'm looking out in the audience and I don't see a lot of people's faces that I recognize, but I can imagine that a lot of them are here probably because they are burdened with having to water their yards manually, and that may be a challenge for them. It probably Fitzgerald and Claire Fitzgerald. They're the owners of the Seagate Nursery and Garden. And of all the correspondence that we've received from the community, this one in particular, I think, kind of summarizes the challenges that maybe some people in the community are going through. With that, I'll turn it over to District Engineer Bob Greshens, and he can elaborate a little bit more on why there's a willingness on our part to be a little more flexible than we originally indicated in our staff report. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry. We've had a number of conversations among staff in the last few days on this subject, and as we're looking through some of the data, as I mentioned earlier, the supply has improved somewhat in San Simeon just since the 15th to the 21st. We estimated the supply at about 145 now in San Simeon, and the demand, again, to this theoretical end date, which was the model, is 108. So you see we've got a little bit of a cushion built up. Other factor that we've talked about is how the outdoor irrigation demands decrease, particularly during the month of November. There's a substantial drop in outdoor irrigation demand. So how much are you going to actually save in November compared to the summer months? It's going to be a percentage of a much lower amount. So in reviewing that, knowing that there's the change of the season occurring, there's a lot less demand occurring in the watershed as a result, particularly as the trees are starting to drop their leaves this time of year. You'll see a pretty good little bump once the willow trees drop their leaves in particular. We're of the opinion that rather than have an absolute ban on outdoor watering, to come up with some intermediate step where you have an odd even once per day watering on, say, a Tuesday and a Thursday, and still maintain the non-potable tanks in the community with no charge for those people who are so inclined, so conservation-minded to go that extra step to use that water and make that available at the same time. And just keep monitoring things as closely as we can. And if the situation changes, we'd have to notify you and reconvene on the subject. But we believe, at least the staff level, that there could be some relaxation of that, particularly as you go into the fall.
Oh. It's green.
Okay.
But it was on. I guess I'm not talking loud enough. Yeah, sorry. I haven't done this before. Thank you, Director Gruber and Director Gressens, about the water situation, as you talked about. And it's part of my talk was about having staggered days and keeping the non-potable water available if there isn't enough rain. I just moved to one side, and there it is. Okay, this situation is really bad, and many communities in the district, in San Luis Obispo, have water issues. A friend of mine in Fresno says they've been having water staggered days for several years now. I wasn't aware of that. And I don't need to say that I hope that the CCSD and that other people are aware of other measures and other ways to work this out. And I've always felt that my neighbors in Cambria were my neighbors, everybody in the town. However, recently a full barrel of my non-potable water was stolen not long ago. And my next door neighbor, Tim Roche, said I could use his name. His water in a barrel was stolen also. We know this because hardly anything was spilled. The barrels didn't tip over. My new trash cans have really tough arms on the lids, and they pulled it off so drastically that they broke it, and they broke it badly. I can't use it. And so I put a lock on my gate. I had put mine behind my gate because Tim Roche didn't have his behind his gate. I put mine thinking that would be enough. However, I think that that's almost breaking and entering. I really think that is entering, at least, and getting on my property. And we've all been doing things to mitigate people taking water. In fact, Mr. Roche and my husband and
I... There is anyone. You feel free to acknowledge it. No one.
Well, Either we're the first or the only. I don't know. Okay, well, I want to thank the board for today and letting me speak. Thank you.
Thank you for testifying, Ms. Deneau. Okay, next we have Gary Talley, and then followed by Anton Rudd or Ruddy.
Good afternoon. My name is Gary Talley. Good afternoon. My name is Gary Talley. My wife Dottie and I have been residents of Cambria for about 14 years now, and we've gone through just about every water condition we've had. My proposal here today is that CCSD somehow would manage to have a water truck come to each home once a week and fill a customer-supplied curbside 25 or 30-gallon plastic can with non-potable water. The customer could then, using a small watering can, water their flowers and trees. Now, this plan would come a little late for Dottie and I, as our potted plants are all dead. We're very concerned about our very dry pine and birch trees. Now, I would hope that this situation we're in now could be better anticipated, and trucks and delivery of non-potable water could be planned for. We have 15-day weather reports, so this shouldn't be a problem. That's all I have today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Talley. And Anton Rudd. I'm sorry I butchered your name, Mr. If you could give me
That's
the correct
okay.
pronunciation.
Thanks, Mr. President and directors. I'll be brief. And I'm pleased that a number of my questions have already been answered as a result of the water reports. My wife and I have owned a property at 282 Chatham Lane for 15-plus years, so we've been part of the community, although not a full-time member, but part of the community for a long time. This is a hard problem. We lived up in the San Francisco Bay Area during the major drought in the late 80s, and looking forward to reading the report. But I guess, you know, this is a hard problem, but it's not a complex problem. You know, if you're running a business and you're looking at cash flow, you have sources of cash and uses of cash, and then the detailed line items tell you what to do with your business and your cash. We have the same thing here with water. We have sources of water, we have uses of water. We have residential use, we have commercial non-hotel use, and we have hotel use. And I guess one of the things I'd like to recommend, and maybe it's part of your report, is that we take this down a level and actually look at, and I think Director Rice perhaps pointed at this, we look at what the consumption is by these various categories and just share the burden a little bit. I'd like to see the water restrictions released a little bit for the folks that have irrigation to worry about. I mean, we've planted, for the most part, dryscape, but nonetheless, you know, we have a few plants that would like to have a little bit of water once in a while, and I think that's probably true of a lot of the folks here. But I think there needs to be a better understanding of the uses of water here. The sources, it seems like, are fairly fixed, and what I don't know is if we have explored new wells and what the cost of those kinds of things would be, or if that's even a possibility. So maybe the sources are fixed, but the uses, it seems to me, are not. And, you know, the Culligan man showed up a few months ago, and we were talking, and he was telling me about the water usage along Moonstone. And it's enormous. At least that's what they're telling me. And I'm not suggesting that we stop the motels. I mean, that's part of the commerce of the town. But I think this needs to be a deeper solution than just saying to everybody, don't irrigate, or we can irrigate until things get bad again. I think we need a plan on a go-forward basis, which is really more comprehensive in terms of usage. And I know that all of us are conserving. You know, our toilets aren't being flushed regularly. We're being very careful with just every usage we have. The other part of my time, not in Cambria, I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where we get less than 9 inches of rain a year. And we're all faced with the same kinds of issues here. So running an odd even day or even a twice a week kind of watering situation, just at a minimum, seems like it's a reasonable thing to do. But not stopping there. I think it's important that we look beyond this. And when, you know, Director Rice talks about the affordable housing project, and that, you know, if we can't do something to at least include that as part of our overall thinking in this process, so that as new projects come on board or new opportunities for water usage come on board, we need to be able to include those as well. And I'm not sure what all the details are here because I haven't read the report yet, but I think that's another important issue. So I guess my recommendation would be, number one, we look at not just the sources but the uses of water down a level from where we are. In San Francisco, I know during the late 80s, I mean, hotels were told, you know, you could wash your sheets on Monday and Thursday, as opposed to washing them every day, assuming that, you know, you had people. Also affects our property values. And so merely catering to a business application, I think, is sort of single-minded in this, and I think we have to kind of have a balance here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And be assured we are looking at all the other options, and that's why Ms. Updegrove is going full speed ahead, full time, to explore the other conservation strategies that we can employ. We have one more, and that's Laurel Stewart.
Yeah, Laurel Stewart. I'm the new chair of the Land Use Committee for the North Coast Advisory Council. And I wanted to comment on something brought up on her report at the NCAC meeting by Director Rice, and also Gail had commented on it. I may have misunderstood, but I gathered you were rather surprised about the change of plans for the affordable housing project, Cambria Apartments. And yet the packet that was submitted to NCAC by County Planning for our review by Rhea and Luker, architects, the architects of the revised plan, included an intent to serve letter from CCSD for the 33 units of this reduced project. So I am concerned that when County Planning sends referrals to you, as they do to us, are you giving them a thorough review? There's a dedicated meter for the irrigation plan in the new plan that was submitted to us, and I presume was submitted to you. I would like to see you submit these plans when they're referred to you by the county to each one of the directors so that they can look them over as well. Did you receive the new plan?
Bob, you want to comment on that?
I just received some plans from Courtney about a day or two ago. I haven't had a chance to go through them
really
yet.
Really? We received them quite some mm-hmm. time ago. Yeah, the revised plan. And actually, our deadline for commenting on them is coming up within a week.
It's not the process. The plans, they get approved by the NCAC, come back before they get approved for the minor use permit. Once the minor use permit doesn't, it's not going to get approved unless we sign off on it.
I have to ask if you want Courtney to speak to the subject, because she's closer to that project than I am at this point, but I defer to the board president on that.
Okay, yeah.
And watering their lawn and so on and so forth, or watering their plants. And I agree with them 50%. The 50% is, it's nice to see that people are cooperating. On the other hand, I think it's not our job. Our job is to provide clean, affordable water to our residents, not to make them drive around with tanks in their truck. So it was really our lack of alarm when early this year, when we weren't using SR4, and the retirements of several people, our lack of due diligence in balancing the aquifers, which has been important over the last decade, and so that's why we're in the position we are, I believe. And I see with the reports that with balancing those aquifers, things are getting far better. And even though I was reluctantly approved the lack of watering, now there are people have a lot of mini cisterns, so to speak, in so that they, if they bought a tank and we're giving them a rebate for it, they have a little, even if they only have a 50-gallon one, those mini cisterns are now throughout the town. I think folks are also using those cisterns they've had. A lot of people have discovered cisterns in their property that they didn't even know they had. They were buried under a house, and now they're starting to use them. So that also attributes to the reduction in the amount of water we've been using. If I go to... and another thing, I just want to comment on the general manager's report. I noticed that he didn't approve any waivers from people. And I think that that was one of the things that kind of disturbed me more than anything else, is that in the previous time when we had surcharges, no matter how good of an excuse a person had, they didn't even know there was a leak, it was repaired, and then the next day it broke again because of fault, whatever. There was never any kind of consideration of a valid waiver, and I would hope that if for some reason we don't relax these provisions, that the general manager actually look at the potential of actually giving a waiver to somebody for some hardship reason. If we go to page 24 here, where before it was, I'll just make a comment, you don't have to turn to it, but a month ago we were looking at a 19 acre foot deficit in the San Simeon aquifer. I'll try and remember on future agenda items to ensure that we look at these tiered rates, or a rate structure that penalizes people for using a lot of water, so that those people that do so, are helping fund advancements. And that surcharge study, the citizens' report that came in, was received last year. And if we were to go into surcharges, we should be perfecting that law, perfecting that process, policy, and ordinance now, when in December, when it's raining, and not wait until next August if we have an emergency that, again, keeps us from having water. So I just wanted to make those few comments.
Thank you, Director Berenger, Director Rice, and Director Robinette, and Director Clift.
Now, I was a little surprised considering how many people have come up and talked to me over the past several weeks about this issue, that how few people are here today. Maybe we should consider evening meetings occasionally more often, so some people who work, who probably are the people who don't have as much time to actually go and pick up their own water, could be here too to give their input. We did do a meter read, didn't we, at the beginning of the month? Is that right? Did we read the meters?
That's correct.
I'm a little alarmed at the lack of data showing whether or not we've actually done anything. It's pretty easy to tell whether the water that we're saving, the reduced amount of water that we've used, is from the landscaping ordinance, because if we look at the meter that measures how much is going into the wastewater plant, if it's going on landscaping, it's not going to be going into the wastewater plant. That's going to be water that comes from inside use. And of course, when there's splits in the pipes, some of that comes from. But when it's dry, you're probably not getting a lot of inflow from, say, groundwater or springs in the general area. So it would be nice to know. We'd know more if it's been an effective measure. Looking at the drought outlook, I printed these up. I'll show them to the board and pass them around. This is this red little thing right here. San Luis County is the only county that is entirely red on this thing. That orange red color. This is extreme drought. This is an outlook for when it may rain again. It numbers a little bit sooner than today, but they weren't available until recently because of the federal government shutdown. Thank goodness we were able to get some of that data. But I would very much like to. I think it's a good thing that we have the landscape irrigation ban on, and I think that we need to continue it, because if it doesn't rain, if it's March before it rains, that 35 acre foot surplus is going to look like, a lot of water to us probably if it doesn't rain until March. And I think maintaining, it's an inconvenience for some people, but I think the overall picture is something that we need to keep in mind, because it may rain December 22nd, in which case I'm going to be way happy if it rains before that, actually. But it may not rain until much later than that. We have less demand because the season is changing. That also means less inconvenience, more fog, less watering. So people who are going to go and get the water from the tanks that we've got available, they will have to do that less, because there's more moisture in the air, more moisture falling from the pine needles onto the plants. And so the inconvenience level is going to be going down as the weather changes some, even if it doesn't rain. I'm concerned if we choose specific days for watering. I'm concerned about the stress on the infrastructure. So if you say this neighborhood or these, you know, this group on this day, well, that means a whole lot of people on that day are going to be using a whole lot more water. And there isn't anything to say that I don't have any landscaping, but let's say hypothetically, I water three times a week. You tell me I can water once a week, it's not too much of a logical leap to think that maybe somebody's going to put the amount that they would spend in 3 days watering, because that's how much their plants normally get. I spend a gallon on each day for three separate days. Why wouldn't I put 3 gallons on when I'm only allowed to water 1 day a week? Now, I am not saying that this is what's going to happen, but it concerns me the stress on the infrastructure for specific day watering. We're going to do that. Let's make sure that our system can handle whatever we set up to do that. I also really think that the entire town shouldn't be expected to pay for so that some people can have landscapes that need water at a level above what the climate can handle. It's going to be dry. You might lose some of your plants. If you've just planted them and they're not established yet, you might lose some plants. It gets dry. We go through cycles. If you live in Cambria, you want to live in Cambria. It's a beautiful town to live in. But you're not going to go grocery shopping after 9 p.m. Not in Cambria. If you want to live in Cambria, there's a certain lifestyle you adopt, and that means sometimes you have to mourn for plants that didn't make it through the drought. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be allowed to water outside, but I'm saying that some adaptation isn't necessarily a bad thing. Have we had any infractions? Has anybody been caught watering or fined?
No.
I have noticed, I've talked to a few people who I've seen watering, and you know, they've stopped immediately because they were like, most of them, it was right when the ordinance was put in place and they just didn't know. But I've seen some sprinklers around town, and I don't want to be a tattletale, I don't want to be a rat like that, but I have talked to people and say, you know, we're trying to conserve, and I'm glad to hear that we haven't had anybody that's been fined, but I hope that doesn't mean that we aren't, when the guys are driving around in their trucks trying to see if they spot anything. And obviously sometimes night stuff, or if it's, you know, low to the ground drip, it's hard to tell. But I mean, I just really want to make sure that we're being fair, because everybody should be treated the same and fairly. And if people aren't following the rules, they should have the consequences of that, especially when there's people who are following the rules and their plants are dying. You know, it's really critical to me. I just think it's kind of an important.
Thank you, Director Rice. Director Robinette.
Okay, thank you very much. And looking at this, there is something that's always clear to me, and what we have today is we have a call for always looking at lessons learned. In my opinion, we always stay flexible because nothing is constant, and there will always be change. So while we know we're certainly in a challenged situation with water today, and we have various forecasts that may predict that we're in a drought or not, we can look at the Weather Channel and see that it might rain again. We have percent of not a lot, but a possibility of rain next week. So it's hot. And we have 145 acre foot, and we have perhaps a projected use of 108 acre foot, and we have a projected possibility of rainy season starting December 22nd. It is tough to know what data do you believe and what direction do you head in. I have to thank the community for the cooperation. I have to thank everyone who's been working hard. I said it when we started this, that I think we have people that, for some, there are always extremes, but I think there are a lot of people that landscaping is very important to them. And I think people that are here have struggled to drag water around, and we even have one instance where somebody actually has lost water they had stored. And so I have to say that for me, I look at compromise. The compromise is based on facts, based on evidence. At this time, I believe looking at alternative watering days is certainly a viable thing. Now, is that to say we might come back in December and, boy, we're really tapped out and really dry? We won't know until we meet together again December 22nd or in December.
November.
Well, but the rainy season's December 22nd. Isn't that right, Bob? Projected.
Yes.
Well, I mean, Bob knows. When is the rainy season?
You know, I was going to bet on the Dodgers to win the World Series, too, but
the
I think, that's what the model said. December 22nd was the end of the dry season. Yeah.
Okay. A lot of pressure here, Bob, now.
Sure.
Really, it's not to say that next month we might not see another situation. Right now, it seems that we see that we could go to an every other day. The wear and tear on the system, again, I have to look at what staff has said. They're believing that if we do a Tuesday, Thursday, and we go by odd number and even numbers, that probably would work for the system. You're away from the weekend. It was interesting. I have always wondered myself, but I have heard people say, well, you know, we use 30% of our water goes to irrigation. The interesting part is we have some real live data now, at least to look at a bit, and we compare. And actually, for the first 3-week period and then the last that you came in with, our reduction on water has been right around 9% ways to carry water around their yards. But the bigger thing to me is it is so clear to me, and I've said it before, we need some kind of water storage. This is a good reminder that we wouldn't find ourselves in these conversations if we had a water bank, if we had water stored. When we have the rainy seasons, we need to hang on to the excess water that we're allowed to use by permit. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Clift.
I'm kind of, I guess, in the middle on this one right now, and I'll give you a couple of situations. Who was that? I'll tell you a story. Well, I'll tell you a philosophy to start with, and then I'll tell you a story on the other side. I do have a problem with a philosophical problem with the asking people to pay the cost of processing water to the level of potability, and then that water being used for non-potable or non-interior types of uses. But that's a fairly philosophical question that can get rather esoteric about, and maybe we need to work towards that rather than just simply imposing that. The second thing is, I'll tell you a story. For the past 4 or 5 years, I've had pumps and some tanks, and I have just not put them together to handle irrigation systems at my home. I have used, like anybody else, I go out and water in the evening, right out of the hose, and don't overly worry about that amount. What I've learned from the band is that I don't have to water every day. And my next-door neighbor, who was asking me about his irrigation system, he has very large, mature plants. And I asked him, and he said his irrigation was set to run every day. And so I said, well, turn it off, you know, and let's see how long we can go. And then I, like some other people in the community, I had been looking for a larger tank for my water system and cistern. And so what I found, because I have a tank in the back of my truck, it's parked outside, and I supply water to myself. But I've also found that I have a couple of neighbors who are single ladies of age, older age. And so they said, well, you know, if I could water once a week, that would work out fine. So I water their place once a week because it only takes a few minutes with the transfer pump and things that I have. So I guess if the figures we have are correct on the well and the amount of water we have, I guess I'm for some form of relaxation slightly on the thing. I'm not for wide open usage because I think what has happened, and this is being down here at the tank across the street, because you have to remember when people are filling up across the street and I'm there, I'm the bad guy. And they know me. They say, oh, you're the guy on TV that did that, you know. So I have to defend our position every day right across the street here. Thank God I'm filling up. So they know that. So what I think we have to do is kind of go a middle ground here and maybe relax the restrictions a little bit, but keep in place what we are doing in terms of the non-potable water, and keep in place the encouragements of people to change their activity slightly. Because a minor move in this thing is a lot of water. Just people saying, I don't have to water every day. I don't. Sure, there's a few little plants on your balcony and things that you probably might have to water every other day to keep alive. But you don't have to water. I mean, when my neighbor's watering a 100-foot pine tree every day, that doesn't make sense, because those trees do very well catching the fog and dropping it down, and they've lived for years and years doing that. So if we could take a moderate approach of saying about three ways. One, okay, I would agree to open up some kind of maybe a once a week thing, so that people who don't have the ability to pump, penalty rates for those who don't conserve, and probably system changes as was recommended, where I was at the coffee den this morning, man has a 4,500 gallon cistern under his home, two tanks, two 2,000, 2,200 gallon tanks. And he was saying, during the winter they fill up and we use them for a while, but if there was a delivery system, and what I think we don't know is how many of those cisterns are out there, how many of those things are out there, and maybe that'll be a direction of our conservation people to say, what is out there to where could we set up some kind of a system that provides non-potable water at a reasonable price for the delivery costs type of thing? So I think it's a three-step approach. I'm willing to relax requirements a little bit. I want us to stay very strong on what we're doing now to keep it going, and I want us to plan during the wet season for the next dry season. So that we have those things in place. We don't, you don't ask for surcharges when in December. You're asking for surcharges in June if that's what's effective. So that's where I kind of stand on the situation, and I guess that tells you where I'll vote.
Thank you, Mr. Clift. I can't tell stories quite as well as you, so I'll be a little bit more brief. I know that a lot of folks have different opinions as to how dry it's going to be. I saw something from Dave Hovde, which suggested that December through March will be quite an active rainy period. So hopefully he's got the right analysis. I'm heartened by the response I've seen this past 6 weeks. I mean, I've got two buckets in the shower. I don't have a cistern, but so I'm saving what I can. I think what it's done is to change the habits of a lot of people in terms of how they approach conservation. I'd like to see, and I'm sure we will see, the staff really get active in terms of working with folks to reduce their use. I know that there are some, not just commercial entities that use a lot of water, but some residential entities that use a lot of water that goes almost entirely to irrigation and accessible to folks in town. And so whatever we do, I'd like to see us continue that effort to help folks to do whatever they can to use the that water for their irrigation purposes. So I too will support a relaxation of the irrigation ban, and I too want to receive frequent updates from staff in terms of what our situation is and how we're you know, what our wells look like and what our use looks like, so that we know that that we're going in the proper direction here.
I have one other question. From a information standpoint, I couldn't find it in the conservation report. How much water have we put into these tanks, both here and at the nursery? Any idea?
I'll defer that to Courtney. She knows. She's keeping a pretty good track on that. But it's quite a bit. It's quite a bit. I see Windsor over there quite a bit filling those tanks up. The one that I see every day is this one. I've only gone up to the nursery a couple times, so I think Courtney would have a fairly good idea. I don't need to throw under the bus and on TV here and everything, but I think she'll come up with a really good answer, or at least pretty close, I hope. Courtney?
It's about 189,000 gallons so far that Windsor's put in, and that was as of October 14th. So obviously the tanks are running low over the weekends because that Windsor doesn't work on the weekends as much as I tried to get them to. So they're filling up their 6,900 gallon tanks, so they're getting filled up, they're getting topped off every day, and then on Friday afternoons they're filling in the morning, and then they're also coming back and topping off in the afternoon. So that it's because they're that way people are able to get water on Saturdays a little bit easier.
So that's probably close to 200,000 gallons a month. That's a big diversion, actually, isn't it?
That's for almost 2 weeks, so it's probably going to be more over a 30-day.
Maybe an acre foot every month that's being diverted. And that's pretty good.
Director Rice and Director Berger.
Couple things. Sounds like most of you have made a decision already, and I'd just like to speak to this. It's like this year when pretty much it felt like all of a sudden we had no SR4, and then we're in an emergency, and with almost no notice in September, we're banning irrigation. I would not want to, as a director, come back in November or December, and it's not rained, and then put the ban back on because we've lifted it right now. I think there's a few things that haven't happened that need to happen before I'm comfortable with the amount of cushion we have between what the demand might be and what the actual aquifers we can pump safely without violating our permits or harming the habitat or causing any other kinds of damage that might happen from too much water use. And that includes doing audits or talking to the top water users, not just commercial but residential. I've talked to a person, they use 60 units every billing period, and most of that is irrigation. When you're talking about the top 25 users, you're talking about a number of units that's probably almost an acre foot when you add it all together. And we haven't addressed that yet, and that provides an additional cushion. The reduction in use on San Simeon because we're using the non-potable for irrigation. Also, there's people that they're like, okay, well, either my plants will be fine or they'll die, or they go out and buy a giant gallon of Evian or whatever to water their plants, whatever they end up doing, so that they if I'm going to be inconvenienced anyway, I might as well go to the store and buy some water from the store and get some jugs to water, you know, rather than using the non-potable. I mean, whatever they're doing, they're not using any water, either potable or non-potable, from either of our systems, and that's also reducing the amount of strain on the aquifers. I don't want people's plants to die. I don't want people's property values to go down. This is the reality of Cambria sometimes, though, and it's difficult. And I think that it's not making the right decision for the overall community to change this, especially since I mean, we don't know. Not even the people that do it for a living know when it's going to rain. They just don't. It's not really possible for us to know what's going to happen. I think we're going to be putting ourselves in a much stronger position if we wait until the November meeting, because then we will have had more audits on the top users, and we will have more data to show that we are going to make it, whether it rains in the middle of December or it doesn't rain until April. I think it is premature to be lifting this. That could end up putting stresses on our, if we do irrigation on specific days, we could end up putting stresses on our system that everybody agrees the deferred maintenance has made weaker. We could end up with broken mains because everybody's trying to water on whatever day it is that we're allowing them to water. I urge you to please reconsider, because we will be able to address it again. And for heaven's sakes, if it rains 5 inches between now and November meeting, I sure hope that the general manager would call a special meeting, that the president would call a special meeting so that we could lift the ban. This is not a good decision, in my personal opinion. I really think the board is making a mistake and lifting it prematurely.
Thank you, Director Robert. Director Rice, thank you, and I really appreciate your support for my idea of an emergency brackish water desal plant in San Simeon, because I think that is the ultimate solution. Is in times like this to have a very small brackish water cleansing RO unit, if we'll call it that, there to keep us from having saltwater intrusion. That's the ultimate decision, to have that plant there that we use maybe once every two or three times every decade in order to keep that that restriction there. I am encouraged, and maybe you didn't note that if you look at the well reports, etc., that in the San Simeon Aquifer, not only has the well levels gone up, but the gradient, the amount of water that we're pulling from this vast aquifer seaward of our production plants was zero. And so in theory, according to our permit, we could go 3 months without, and that was the urgency last time, is that we only had 3 months worth of time before that aquifer would be pulled out. Now it's September, or no, it's October, oh, November. That would be January 15th before we run into that issue, even if we don't use SR4 at the high school, which we have been using daily. So to me, you have to look at the facts. The facts say that we do have enough water, and we're in the business of providing water to our customers. So it's the gradient that it convinces me that we're not isn't in dire shapes. I don't want to say that we're not in an emergency, because I do think that we should install this month or next a small portable 260,000 gallon a day plant to just do that. And another nuance, and it's a very important nuance, if a person is out of town, they're in LA, and they have had their timer set for daily watering or bi-weekly watering or whatever, and no person was in attendance there. So if we enforce just that, if we see that sprinklers are going on a day that's not there, we can alert that owner that may not know what's going on and make sure that at least somebody is standing there, because that's in the ordinance. That's what you have to do. And if they get used to having a person standing there, be it Enrique or whoever, eventually they're going to wind up saying, well, why don't you just bring the water over for me or something? So I think that enforcing that is very important. On that, I move that we adopt a standard that has once a week watering with potable water, potable actually, water, and we start with every Thursday. It's if your address ends in an even number, you can water with potable water. And if it's a Tuesday and your address ends in an odd number, that once a week time, you can water with potable water. And we continue to keep all the other restrictions in place, especially making sure that a person is in attendance at all watering. That's my motion. And
Director Abinette.
Oh, you want to make a motion?
That's a motion. No, well, okay. I need a second.
I'll second.
Director Abinette.
Okay. Well, that's what I just wanted to comment a little bit, that certainly I think that we have to look at where have we gone with this over the last few weeks, what have we learned, how do we know what's going to happen tomorrow? We have ideas, we have predictions, but we'll never know until we're there. But I do hope that our community would continue to work together just on the savings that so many people have come to the meeting since last month, and we've all heard other things. Truly, the things like putting a bucket in the shower. How many people find buckets in their showers that never used to? I mean, I do. Come on, raise your hand if you've got a bucket out there in your shower. Thank you. And I didn't used to do that before. Well, I won't ask more. But, you know, just even by the sink, when you're washing your hands or rinsing your hands or rinsing anything, and I have to tell you this, some people have the wherewithal to have someone come in and water for them. Others do not. Some people, if they're putting the bucket in the shower, we have a somewhat of a senior population here. I don't know if you've noticed this, but I have to tell you, for some people, it's hard to pick the bucket up and take it outside. And so we do the best we can, and I think what we're talking about here today is truly a compromise, but again, looking at some kind of backup plan, as Director Barringer has suggested, or as I've suggested, we look at the bigger picture of when are we ever going to get away from the conversation and find some way of creating some type of water bank, some type of storage, and move on from this conversation. So I appreciate sharing that with you.
Director Clift.
Yeah, and I would also I want to comment on the letters that were received that the manager denied requests. Many of those letters, and one very specifically hit me, saying that they spend anywhere from 3 to 4 weekends a year in Cambria, and they were only using 6 or 7 units of water every billing period. Favorable thought for a person who uses 6 or 7 units to water a lawn and there or whatever they were watering, because that's a ridiculous waste of water. If you took the position of 20 or 30% of water is outside use. And that would be that person using about 30 units of water if they lived here. And I don't think anybody would agree that that's useful. And I'm not favorable to people who say, gosh, I only use 6 or 7 units. The fact is I'm never here. I have a next-door neighbor that's never here, and he's never used 6 units. At any one time, he does have an irrigation system, but he shut it off or changed it, I think. But I don't have a lot of, I say continue to respond the way you've responded.
Dr. Rice?
We wait until the next month. We're about to read the meters again, so people will get a bill. And on that bill, they will have had most of that bill with no irrigation, unless we pass this today where they can go and water either a day, a week, or whatever you guys decide you want to do. I just would like to, again, please reconsider if you've already made your decision, because I don't think it's the responsible thing to do for managing the resources that belong to everybody in the community and not just the people who have landscaping and want to water conveniently with water that we have treated, pumped, used spent electricity and chemicals to transport to their home in a convenient way.
Thank you, Director. I think what we're doing is relaxing the ban. I don't think we're eliminating the ban. I think we're just making some modification to it based upon production levels and other data that we have provided to us. And again, if circumstances change, then I think we can also change in terms of how we move forward. But based upon what I've heard at this point, I'm encouraged that, we're able to relax a little bit.
You know, another interesting thing that I found out, I keep asking people how much you use, because everybody tells me they don't use very much. And so I keep asking them, how much do you use? And the most common answer I get is, I don't know. I pay the bill each time it comes. And I ask them to get a bill. And, you know, it varies all over. It could be 6 units. It can be 12 or 14. But it's been that way fairly regularly. For most people use almost the same amount every billing period, whether they use a lot or whether they use a little. And so it becomes...
And whether or not your grandchildren are visiting.
Well, yeah, but your grandchildren visit every month. And they get used to a certain billing amount rather than a use amount. And so a lot of this, I hope what has happened is that people are starting to look at that and maybe slightly change their behavior.
And I think
people a little bit.
I think certainly the level of awareness has been heightened on this. And Mr. Gruber, then perhaps Mr. Carmel, if you could help us to put together the motion that Mr. Berenger made.
Can I just say something related to the 25? And it's just like the supplemental source of water or our infrastructure. It is going to take time, and it's going to... But I think every month that we come back, you're seeing that we're making improvements, and it is getting better. I absolutely understand that it's frustrating sometimes when you don't get the information in a timely manner. But I think what we're seeing, just like in the utility manager's reports and the engineer's report and the district in my report, is that we are making progress. We're making progress in infrastructure repairs. We have a heck of a long way to go. I get frustrated with that because I want to see it all done now. But I think it's important that we continue each month to make progress. And I think that we may not have all the data that you want. We'll do our best. But if the board continues to be committed to conservation, some of the things that Director Rice has mentioned, you'll see drastic reductions in acre foot of water being used. And nobody will have to carry buckets. And I've done this in other communities, and I've seen it happen in large scale. I mean, you're talking 10, 20, 30, 40, easily acre feet of savings. And I know we can do that, but it's just a matter of taking the time and doing the audits and really ramping up the conservation program. So.
Okay. Mr. Carmel, your understanding of the motion now, if you could...
The resolution that you have in your packet parallels the language that Director Berenger indicated. I did want to note, at the risk of prolonging this discussion, car washing was not included in the original prohibition, and it's not included in the resolution that you're about to consider. And you can certainly throw it in. We actually have prepared either prohibiting it or including it in the once-a-week program that you're talking about. Again, it's... I just wanted to note the fact that it's not included, and it may be insignificant, but I thought it was important to note.
Let's move forward.
Inserting that prohibition on the even odd days, as with the other activities, insert that in there.
Isn't that one of the things that's already prohibited? You can't wash a car with a blah blah blah.
No, car washing is actually permitted. Of course, you have to use a hose that cuts off.
Cuts off, and
right.
You have to use a turn-off nozzle.
I think it's clearly written. I don't have I don't.
Dr. Robinette, you had another comment? No, or you're just okay. We have before us the motion from Director Berenger, as seconded by Director Robinette, to modify the resolution that was adopted at the special meeting.
Just to clarify, that's now resolution number 42-2013 that you're moving to approve.
Okay, very good. Call the roll.
Vice President Berenger?
Yes.
Director Robinette?
Yes.
Director Clift?
Yes.
Director Rice?
No.
President Thompson?
Yes. So that resolution is approved. Okay, and Mr. Gruber, would you make the appropriate notifications? I assume Ms. Tanner will also provide some information on that.
She's twittering or
twittering as we
tweeting?
Speak.
Tweeting? See, I don't tweet. Tweeting. She tweets.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Want to take a break, or you want to keep on?
Let's okay. Keep going. Great. Moving to regular business, Mr. Gruber, we have one item.
This is item 8A, correct, President?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, great. Alan just walked in. That makes me feel a little better. No, we didn't take a break. President Thompson wants to. We're trucking everybody. See what I did? Nobody's listening to me.
Do we still have a quorum or not? Or if I get up and walk?
Yeah. Okay, we will take a 5-minute break.
I want you to know that I am listening to you, but nobody else does. I'm sorry. I was trying to stall because Alan was starting.
The first column to the left, deficit surplus from operations, that's the budgeted amount. And the middle column is the actual results. It doesn't change the under over variance column at all. Again, I do apologize for that. Right, yes, yes. You can either move the numbers or move the headers. Right, yeah. The headers and the numbers don't match. But the far left column is the budgeted amount, and that matches the actual reports, budgeted actual variance. So, okay. Then going department by department, the water department was budgeted for roughly a $66,000 surplus. Came in at about $30,000 with a $36,000 variance. Conservation was budgeted for a deficit of about $85,000. The actual was about $94,000, so a variance of roughly $9,000. Wastewater was budgeted at roughly $1,000 surplus. Their surplus ended up being $142,000, so a variance of the actual amount was $3,980 for a variance of $4,400. So some variance, but pretty minor on the general fund departments. As far as, just real briefly touch on the main reasons for the significant variances with water. If you go to pages 85 through 87, but 85 being the most significant. When I cite page numbers, I'm going by the bottom numbers, which are the packet numbers, not the report numbers.
Before you go there, just a question as to why the variance on the wastewater is so great.
I was going to cover that after water, yes. Okay. Yeah, definitely. the largest single factor for water, again, on page 85, about the middle of the page, major maintenance, budgeted $132,000, came in at roughly $247,000, $114,000 deficit there. That is not completely, but certainly the largest single factor is the SR4 media failure that had to be replaced, and then there were other major unplanned repairs as far as that goes. Obviously, if you go throughout, virtually every line has a variance, but that one sticks out. Revenue actually came in roughly $54,000 to the good. And the other variances, for the most part, in water operations were to the good, significant ones. The one exception is maintenance and repairs delivery system. So it does get back to the infrastructure is the cause there. Conservation, the main...
Before we go on with that, I think it's important to note that if you remember when the SR4 failure occurred, and we had an estimate of some $80,000. The general managers perceived that they might be able to squeeze it out of the budget somewhere, and we talked about, no, maybe that ought to come out of surplus. But the fact is they did squeeze it out of the budget, and I think that's an important...
...to work in conservation, but with the ramp-up of the conservation program, he was... pretty involved in it, especially towards the end of last fiscal year. So that, the variance in salaries and wages, payroll taxes, which is over $21,000, so more than accounts for all the variance, was the district engineer's time spent on the conservation program.
Okay.
And moving on to wastewater, if there's no questions, of course, this is by far the largest variance. And this, to a very large degree, is a timing matter. Again, largest single item, capital outlay is the largest, but next largest in the variance is major maintenance, $83,000 variance there. That had to do with the CCTV, the sewer pipe videotaping and cleaning.
I'm sorry, what page are you on?
Page 90.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
The CCTV, the first 20% was budgeted for last year. It didn't get up and running till very, very, very late in the year, and actually till late June. So most all the work was done in the current fiscal year. So the costs end up in this fiscal year. So it's just, it wasn't spent last year. The work was done. It was just a couple months timing difference, but that's enough to throw it to a different fiscal year. The other very significant number, capital outlay, and that was, again, a matter of projects that were budgeted that were not done last year. It's not that they're not important or anything, and I would defer, obviously, to the general manager. As far as the timing and whatnot, but it's my understanding, the staff can only, they were addressing more emergency things and were not able to get to these planned major items. It's not that they won't get done or not going to be getting done. It's just they weren't done in that time frame. Yeah, there was a little bit more revenue than expected, and other areas were under budget, but those two factors more than account for that $141,000 variance. If you want me to talk
of the Vets Hall to private parties, I know that was a new item that occurred over the year.
Let's see, that's page 96. You know, I could give you that figure. It's combined in the total Veterans Hall rent. It's not shown separately. I'd have to look it up and let you know. It was not a, it's less than 50%, I know, of the overall Vets Hall revenue. I'd have to look it up to give you the exact figure. I'd be more than happy to do so and provide it in the finance manager's report next month or however you would want to report it.
$10,000 is more than we got.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that would be a good comparison.
Sure. Yeah. No, that'd be no problem at all.
And we're starting to see more activity relating to that with the Quinceaneros and things like that. So, like anything, it's going to take a while to get the word out, but I'm pleased with the amount of private events we're having here. And then that money, Alan, you and I were talking about the amount of money we spent. And you had made a comment that Jerry McKinnon would probably be really happy. What item was that particular item?
Well, that's I was mentioning the about the middle of the page, maintenance and repairs, Veterans Hall, came in about $5,600 higher than budgeted. But again, they were doing improvements here.
In other words, we're that money that we're receiving from those private events, we're making every effort to put those back into the. Into the Veterans Hall. The next thing we really want to focus on, there's going to be some additional improvements to the foyer out here, but the kitchen needs some work. If we're going to continue to have events here and have people want to rent them, we're going to have to make some improvements to the kitchen to make it more commercially compatible to be able to serve food and things like that. So that's in the works.
Okay.
One thing on the wastewater projects, you know, when you look at the wastewater and you say, well, there's $140,000-something, Alan was right about with limited resources and staffing, and but we have hired one additional person for the wastewater department, and we're in the process of interviewing one other one, so we'll have the wastewater department up to speed, but also having someone assist us with project management on some of these projects. We're doing that, as I indicated in my general manager's report. So it's the little things, but those little things make a difference, and we have somebody on board now to help with those. And so hopefully we'll end this year without having FAR that I think is really high. So we're going to go out and get some more bids. But the things like that, we can readdress the things that weren't done and maybe reprioritize as we move forward. So
super. Okay, questions.
I have a question,
Director Rice.
This is on page 87, the water fund, water department, the demand supply analysis. Is that that's not the water conservation plan, right? Page 87.
Yes, by the Mattos. I always mispronounce that, and I apologize.
Yeah,
the Mattos group.
I thought we ended up having to pay them a little bit more than we thought we were going to. Or didn't we budget an amount that was kind of less than what we ended up spending?
That was adjusted at mid-year, if memory serves.
Oh, it was adjusted. So this budgeted number is adjusted from the mid-year adjustment.
That's a budget. Yeah, that's the most
current
budget.
I'm still learning the ins and outs of budgeting.
Yeah.
Where the numbers.
If there is a change in mid-year, it would be shown there as that's, again, most current budget amount. Yes.
Got it. Thank you. That's really helpful for me to understand some of those little minutiae that can make all the difference, especially since we're talking about adding and subtracting numbers so they come out right.
And President Thompson, the Budget Committee did also have a chance to meet and go over this prior to it being brought to the board meeting, and they also had the chance to review the first 3 months of fiscal year 2013 budget. And I want to thank Director Clifton, Director Robinette for working with us and helping us on this. And they made some good suggestions. So we're going to keep – this is going to keep improving, too, as a document that's easy to understand.
Thank you, Mr. Gruber, and thank you, Mr. Levasseur. Appreciate it. This is just a receive and file item, so there was no motion necessary, but we appreciate the update. We are moving then to item 9, which is public comment. We don't have any. Oh, we do? Oh. Okay. Erwin, your eyes.
Good afternoon. First of all, I want to thank you folks for doing what you do. I know it's a tough job sometimes, but somebody has to do it, and you're doing a good job. So I really appreciate that. And Jerry, you've been very good to the community and for the community. Anyway, I just remember the standards as far as surcharges and other things, but I really think it'd be a good time to direct some resource to this document and take a look at it. We can get the committee back together, I think, some of them anyway, and I just think it's something that needs to be done. So, and I think it'd be very helpful to you, to your staff as well. So,
thank you. I definitely think that's a wise idea. And Mr. Gruber, do you have a copy? And could you?
Yes, I do. And I'll make sure I'll make sure that I get you everybody a copy. But I also think it's a good idea to get that back together, because in the last 3 years or so we've learned a lot of new things, and I think it should be revisited. I've met with John McKinnon a couple different times, mm-hmm. and gone over it. And
he was on the committee also.
Yeah, no. I think it's a good idea, because there are things that we can add and make it better.
And if you could reconvene as many as possible of the original group, I think that'd be a terrific idea.
I was the recording secretary, so I have all the notes and minutes and things, so you can contact me.
Might I suggest that next month, just because, not that I don't mind committees, but we have an excellent presentation. It was one of those receive and files. We just received it and kind of tossed it. And if we have it, not necessarily to act on anything, but to discuss at our next board meeting, if everybody could just read it, then we'll give, if there's a committee, we can give some direction to the committee or something, and not reinvent a lot of this stuff that's already very good. So that would be my suggestion when it comes to future agenda items, that we just have a discussion of that, and then so we can move forward a little quicker.
Super.
And one other thing, and talking to Bob Gressens, your engineer, in fact, you did a good job today. Being an engineer myself, I like the way the numbers are looking in your what's in the capacities for your well fields and such. But he also showed me a graph, which he didn't bring forward. It shows the actual water used for landscaping in November, December. It almost drops to nothing in that graph, particularly December. It just drops right down to most of it's just for interior use. So, and one other thing, I think, as you know, there's thousands of acre feet of water that goes into the ocean out of both of your creeks each year. We need to store that somewhere. And I think the whale rock.
Public comment at the end, and I don't see anybody here, but I just want, I hope that next month or during the month we can get some input on moving that. I think public comment at the end was good, because we had so many people here that were able to actually speak to 7A and not have to wait forever. On the other hand, I think we should be sensitive to some people that are thinking we're moving this around for some reason. So I'd like to get feedback on that agenda change, perhaps next month, you know, by those people that feel that it might have been. I think it was positive, but some people don't. I'd like to find out their reasons.
One of the suggestions that some other agencies use is a block of time, like 20 minutes or 30 minutes, and whatever public comment goes during that period of time, then it stops, the regular business goes on, and then you have public comment at the end.
I like that compromise. It sounds good. Yeah. I like that at the end, because then everybody kind of sees what's going on. But, you know, give them an opportunity then, and if somebody abuses it, well,
but it's limited to a very specific block of time. You'll probably get kickback as to who got their time and who didn't. But there's that.
Well, perhaps that's a good compromise. I felt that basically, in meetings past, we were being unfair to people that came here for specific agenda items by asking them to wait for discussion on all the items that weren't on the agenda. And so, but your suggestion that that we perhaps just set a bit of time early on.
It's a fixed period of time from whatever time to whatever time, and that's it.
Okay, we'll look at that.
And then any excess.
Yeah. Very good. Any other
future agenda items?
Mr. Carmel is looking at us because we're...
The next item is future agenda items, and maybe we should put it on that.
I thought that's what we were talking about.
No, I've got a future agenda item I'd like to...
okay.
Well, maybe this is public comment. Can I go to the podium?
No, you're...
I think we've got to be considering a graduated water pricing.
What's that got to do with future agenda items?
Put it on the future agenda item.
Yeah.
As opposed to tiered. Tiered rates... If you'd go between 6 and 8, there's no advantage to do 6. But if you had a graduated rate, which you have a rate for 6...
About rates is an acceptable future item prior to even starting a rate study.
So we don't have somebody coming in unguided and doing something.
No, I think it's an excellent idea. Okay. I have a future agenda item.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't know if it was added earlier in the meeting when we were talking about it at the beginning of the meeting. Making the Utilities and Infrastructure Committee rather than ad hoc a standing committee. I'd also like to see us consider making the conservation not an ad hoc also as a discussion for future agenda. I don't know whether the board supports it. That's what the future agenda is for. Also, next month, if there is not a huge agenda, I'll have, and if Tim and or David have time, I'll have suggested bylaws for the board to consider.
And I have one other where I don't know if other people have been contacted or not, but I've been contacted and asked if we would reconsider the Londonderry Street or Green Street proposal for. That has to do with the bank and such.
Since we told them, I'm just thinking about this. We told them come back and show me that you really have a buyer. If we're talking about the same thing, we said we're going to treat them without prejudice. I think we kind of treated them with prejudice,
and we did. And the board voted to not approve the extension request.
Right.
And I feel that that item's done.
You feel that it's dead. I would support one, but the president sets the agenda.
I don't think there's three individuals to. So yeah.
The contention that was presented to me was that there's some differences of the way they're looking at the project, and they would ask to be reconsidered.
With that being the end of future agenda and discussion, we'll adjourn to closed session.